fun.
First off, you're beautiful.
Thank you.
And what's so amazing about you is that if I were to look at you, I would have never not known that you weren't trans. So who was the first person you told your cis to?
I have never been asked or felt the need to tell anyone that I was cis.
When was the moment that you felt your breast budding? Did you use tampons?
I thought we were going to talk about my show.
Well, I think we need to get through this. These are just the preliminary questions. When you were going through puberty, did you feel trapped by the changes your body was going through? Did you feel like a girl?
I don't even know what that would feel like because I was told that I was.
I think you're incredibly brave to be a cisgendered woman in this world. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Is that not the most awesome thing you have heard this week? Janet Mock going up against Alicia Menendez. I should know how to pronounce her last name since her father is our U.S. Senator. But I thought that was an awesome video. The way she turned around those questions, somebody should hire her to be a host because I should keep my mouth shut about that, I know. But she's damn good. Okay, I will tell you. She's damn good. Anyway, how you doing? It is the Rebecca Juro Show. We got a lot to talk about. We've got guests like you would not believe. We got them lining up outside the doors tonight. But you know what? I wanted to start off tonight with something that went on. Of course, as you know, we've been talking a lot about the RuPaul thing. We've been talking about some of the issues, the Drag Race 76 video. We had Noah Michelson, who is the executive editor over at Huffington Post, Gay Voices. We had him on the show last week to get into this. But, you know, I have to tell you, that story is not over. Not by a long shot. I'm going to get into some other details about why that is a little later in the show. But I wanted to start off tonight with, there was a video posted at Huffington Post Gay Voices, and it was on the topic of the RuPaul thing. I'll just read the, here's the title of the post. The title of the post is Courtney Act, who apparently is a British drag queen, at least that's as far as I can gather from the information presented here. He's some sort of British drag queen, and Our Lady J, who is, I think, some sort of piano player or something. I'm not really familiar because I hadn't heard her name until 5 minutes ago. But apparently she's a transsexual woman and she plays piano or something. I'm not exactly sure. But in any case, apparently these two sat down with each other and they had this discussion where Our Lady J was apparently being cast in the role of speaking for the trans community. I found that very difficult to swallow. And I'm going to give you some examples why. Let's see. Hang on a second. I want to see which one I want to run here. Where have my clips all gone? Where can they be? Why don't we just start with the first one, Mr. Mike, while I look for that list.
Going back to that episode, let me say that I watched it with my boyfriend, and he was really offended by the female versus shemale, and I wasn't. So I asked him, what is offensive about that word to you? If you take away the sex shame, like, what's offensive about that word? The only responses that I got was, I'm not supposed to like it. Mm-hmm. So there was never any true, like, offense.
So, okay, so basically what she's saying is that this transsexual woman is saying that her boyfriend was more offended by the Drag Race 76 video and the, the abject hate directed towards transgender women in that video than she was. She apparently was not offended. So let's just take that for what it's worth. So what we have here, let's just, lay this out. This is not a personal thing, but let's just lay out what we've already learned. We have a transsexual woman, self-identified. She identifies as transsexual in this video. And basically, doesn't seem to be particularly connective or supportive with that community. But, well, it gets even more interesting because wait till you hear this one. Wait till you hear this one. Mike, can you run Act Two?
And it wasn't until they came for Rue where I put my foot down and I said, enough. So I don't understand personally what Rue's relationship with those words are, but I know that he isn't hateful towards trans people.
No.
There was suddenly very clear hate speech coming from the trans community saying they were defending themselves from hate speech. I've never seen someone in the public eye say to trans people, I hate you. And I heard that coming from trans people about RuPaul.
Now, two things about that, what we just heard. First of all, have you noticed how they're all, oh, it's Rue. Yes, my buddy Rue. Because I would point out that, and this is also mentioned in the video, that both of them have apparently made appearances on RuPaul's Drag Race, or some kind of appearances with RuPaul. I don't know whether it was actually on Drag Race. But they're both talking, oh, this is my buddy. This is a serious conversation. You have two people who are former show guests who both love RuPaul. That's, I mean, and you're framing this as a debate? I mean, I'm having trouble because, you know, we do a lot of debates on this show. Generally, you have to have people who at least disagree with each other some of the time that aren't basically a mutual admiration society that keep telling each other that they're right. I mean, was this presented as serious discussion? I think they were trying to sell it as serious discussion. I'm having a lot of trouble believing, you know, finding this particularly credible, you know, when a trans woman who identifies as trans and then refers to her presumably own community as they and them, I have to say, based on Our Lady J's own words, it sounds like she doesn't consider herself part of the community that she claims to represent. And I'm puzzled by that, because if you don't feel in sync with the community, if you don't feel a part of the community, which is what seems to be inferred by distancing yourself with the words they and them, it's these other people over here, well, then I'm sorry, but I don't see how that qualifies someone like that with those kind of opinions, with that kind of intentional distance from our community, to speak on its behalf. I'm having trouble finding that credible at all. I mean, you know, I don't know what kind of a person this woman is like. I kind of got a clue. I did invite her on the show to take these things on. And before that, and I should point this out, before that I was having a conversation in the comments on this clip, and I made a huge mistake, which I apologized for immediately as soon as I was aware of it. I called her a drag queen, which was wrong, and I apologize. I'll apologize here on the show as well, okay? I fucked up. I screwed up. I thought Our Lady J sounded like a drag name to me. It did. And yes, I made a stupid assumption that I should have verified. My fault, full responsibility, hello, right here. Okay, not trying to shield myself from blame for that in any way. I should have been more careful. I wasn't. It was my mistake. I fucked up. I'm sorry. However, when I went to Lady J, Our Lady J, and contacted her on Facebook and asked her, you know, to come on the show and talk to me, she called me based on that misgendering. She called me irrational and refused to come on the show. So you guys can make your own judgments on what that says about her individually. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to attack her personally. That's not what we do on this show. I'm finding out that the station apparently is full. So, Mr. Mike, if you could open up that magic trap door that you have to let more listeners in.
Okay.
That would be awesome. That's one of our guests in the next hour. Will Kohler is messaging me and telling me he can't listen to the show. So, and that's kind of important since we're going to actually have him on and he's going to talk about stuff. So we would like to have some extra time. Anyway, continuing on. I want to throw on, which one were we going for? Oh, I think we got to go for act number three, Mr. Mike.
When tranny wasn't a bad word, and it was not a bad word, people said, I'm offended by it because people were annoyed by it. And then it became a bad word. Suddenly you had a word that had no power, and it had a lot of power.
Yeah.
And so now we have handed people who don't like us, we've handed them ammunition.
Yeah, that's
saying,
true.
Here is a really nasty word for you to use to me.
Go for it.
Go for it.
Yeah, you know, once again, seems like, you know, blame it on the community, right? Blame it on the community, because, you know, it's always those nasty trannies, right? I mean, I'm sorry. I mean, you know, and I don't want this to sound personal, but this is so fucking pathetic. It's unbelievable. I mean, how do you make these kind of excuses for? Well, hang on. We're not even done yet because this gets just as bad. Mike, can you run number four?
The way that I empowered myself was to say that those words didn't matter from the community where I grew up in. I had to identify where the love came from. And as soon as I identified where the love came from, that love grew and took over. And I had to put down my defenses in order for them to put down their defenses. Mm-hmm. I had to truly look at my place in things and see that, you know, a couple people called me a few bad names, and I took it out on everyone. Mm-hmm. And I turned into an asshole. Mm-hmm. And then people started responding to me being an asshole. Mm-hmm. So, like, I was responsible for some of that. I'm not saying kids are responsible for being bullied. Mm-hmm. But whenever you're still holding on to it 20 years later, 10 years later, it is your responsibility to let that go.
Yeah. So the real reason why, you know, it's not about trans women who are standing up and saying, we don't want to be disrespected anymore. It's because of leftover emotions from being bullied as children. I mean, wait a minute. Isn't this woman a piano player? Not a psychologist. I mean, I'm sorry, but I have such a hard time taking arguments like this seriously, especially when they come from somebody who claims to be a member of our own community, but can't even seem to, at least from the words that we've heard spoken tonight, certainly doesn't seem to consider herself a member of our community or somebody who's sympathetic to its issues or even cares if trans women are offended or if 23-year-old transphobic editors at the Gay Voices publish hate videos. Yeah, transphobic, you heard me. I heard it. And I said that word because, well, I did a little research. Some intentional, some accidental. And, you know, a lot of interesting things came up about this associate editor, James Nichols, and we'll be getting into that in our last half hour. Very interesting. Apparently, this is not the first time that this guy has been caught doing transphobic crap. And not only isn't it the first time he's been busted doing this shit, it's not even the first time that a Gay Voices contributor has left the blog over this. Interesting, huh? But yet, well, I'll tell you the rest a little later on this evening. It's really unbelievable. But apparently, not only didn't this guy get called out on this by his boss, Noah Michelson, but he got promoted as a result. Or, well, he got promoted immediately afterwards. I don't know about results. So, yeah, lots to talk about tonight. And, you know, it's interesting because, well, And I'll take a couple of minutes, because frankly I'm done with this Lady J nonsense. You know, I and again, I don't just say this, okay? I don't want to get personal about this. Yeah, I think she's a bit, I don't know what the word, I'm trying to think of the right word here. Let me put it this way. I'm disappointed that she could not find the fortitude or the firm beliefs to defend her own views and challenge, you know, and you know, if you really believe in what you say, you should be willing to come on and have it challenged. But apparently, she's only comfortable with someone like Courtney Act, a fellow RuPaul supplicant who agrees with her on every single thing, that every single point that she makes. And apparently that, I guess, I mean, going by her own behavior and refusal to come on the show, I have to conclude that this is a woman who is only comfortable when she's in a situation where everybody thinks she's right and agrees with her all the time. She's unwilling to be challenged on her views. So given that, I find it very difficult to find somebody like that, or their opinions, particularly credible, honestly. Because if you won't come up, you won't stand up for your own views, you put them out there for all to see, but then when you're challenged on them, you run away? Well, I'm sorry, I don't think that's particularly credible. I think if you really believe in what you say, if you believe in it enough to put it up on a video on the largest blogging site in the world, then you should at least be willing to have this fortitude and the belief in your own opinions to defend them against somebody who isn't going to fawn all over you, somebody who speaks for the working class in this community, somebody who speaks for the 9-to-5ers, somebody who speaks for the majority. I mean, honestly, I don't know. I mean, I just got a sense as I watched this conversation. You can see this; it's still up on Huffington Post Gay Voices. I got the sense as I was watching this video, and like I say, not making a personal attack, but the aura of this whole discussion was like I was waiting for one of them to go, Jeeves, bring along another pitcher of Appletini's, kiss kiss. You know, I mean, I was waiting for that because that's what it sounded like. It said like casual discussion at the latest, you know, HRC gala or something. I mean, really just completely detached from the real everyday community, you know, the folks who show up on Facebook and the folks who work every day and are striving and, you know, don't have, you know, don't live in Europe and don't have, you know, live that lifestyle where they get invited to all the galas and all the, you know, people who go and they live and they have kids and wives and cars and, you know, just live average everyday lives. And well, I did not see any reflection of that whatsoever, that this was completely detached from, I mean, this woman just, I couldn't associate, for me, watching this, I could not understand why this woman was being presented as a representative of the trans community. Because she does not reflect in any way what the majority of trans women, certainly that I've heard, have said. You know, I find a difficulty in taking someone seriously when they say things that are like that, where they blame is on leftover feelings about bullying. I mean, this is like, it's like a bad comedy skit on Saturday Night Live. I swear to God. I mean, I don't know. I'm sorry. I mean, you know, I would encourage people to watch this video and judge it for themselves. I think you'll see the same thing that I was. That, well, I hate to say it, but, you know, it seems to me, and I've been saying this, I, you know, This is hard for me to say because I like Noah Michelson. I respect him. I think he's a good guy. But I'll tell you, as far as being a community voice, if people accept me as such, I find gay voices becoming less and less relevant to, and supportive of the trans community all the time. The more I learn about this blog and the people who run it, the less supported I feel. I mean, honestly, I just heard a story earlier today, and I'm not going to give you the details because we'll get into that later, but I just heard a story today that puts things in an even more perspective, because I'll be honest with you, I wrote a blog post earlier this week, and I said that I was staying at Gay Voices because I felt that the way to deal with it was to get more involved, not less. We spoke last week. We had Mitch Kellaway. We talked about Mitch Kellaway was leaving the blog because he felt that the Drag Race 76 video, he couldn't deal with it. I said I was staying, but you know, I'll tell you, after what I've learned over the course of this last week, I don't know what to think anymore. And you know what? I'm not saying anything, and I'm not making any commitments one way or another or anything. But I'll tell you one thing for sure, that the events of this past week have caused me to revisit that question. I don't know where I'm going with that yet. I really don't. But I will say that I am revisiting that because I am becoming increasingly less comfortable with the way that anti-trans bigotry is being given free rein on this website. And when people complain, we're called haters and we're called bigots. And, you know, and there's just, it seems like the stuff that's been posted has, from the editorial staff, and I'm not talking about contributors here, I'm talking about the editorial staff, everything that I've seen posted on this issue by the editorial staff has been resoundingly anti-trans. I think we deserve better. I think it's time we started demanding better. And I think it proves 100% what I was saying last week in my blog post, that the problem at Gay Voices is perspective, and a 23-year-old transphobic kid doesn't have any. That's the problem. When you hire children to do adult work, this is what happens. I know. I used to manage a crew of teenagers at CBS. And when you give them too much responsibility, you shouldn't be surprised when they fuck up. And that's what happened here. Okay? This guy is a fresh out of college. Okay? I'll go into the details, but suffice it to say, again, this is not the first time he's been caught acting transphobically. And it is not the first time that a Gay Voices contributor has left the blog because of his transphobic behavior. So we will get into that a little later. Right now, we are going to our first break. We've got Georgie Jessup. We'll be back in 5 with Diego Sanchez. Rebecca Giro Show, thanks for sticking around. And we have on the show right now our good buddy Diego Sanchez. Hi, Diego. How you doing?
I'm good, Becky. How are you?
Good. Now, I want to let everybody know that in addition to your work with PFLAG, who you're working with now, you were also a senior aide for former Congressman Barney Frank. You were there in the middle of the last ENDA fight. You've seen this battle up close. And that's one of the big reasons why I wanted to have you on tonight, Diego, because I think there are a lot of questions that I think a lot of trans folks have, and I've seen them asked, and I don't think we've heard them answered, like, to our satisfaction. We've heard reasons, we've heard excuses, we've heard theories, we've heard... So I want to know from you, you're the guy who's been inside, can you tell us what happened in 2009 when everybody was so excited about ENDA? We had Nancy Pelosi, we had Barney Frank, we had all these people saying, oh yeah, 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 we're going to do it. And then all of a sudden, it went off the radar like nothing happened with no word. And people were like, what happened? So I want to ask you, what happened?
Well, I still ask myself that sometimes, Becky. I was there, and you and I were talking at the time, and we were watching ENDA come to the forefront. It was next in line. We were ready to go. We had hate crimes out of the way. Celebrated that, moving on with ENDA, built momentum, controlled the White House, the Senate, and the House. Everything was set and felt ripe for us to go. And I'll tell you that my boss, Barney Frank, thought that we had the votes to keep going. Unfortunately, there are many voices into some of our leaders' ears. And unfortunately, others among us who are not us, meaning not trans people, but among leaders in the gay and lesbian community, not the bi community, who convinced our party leader, our speaker, that what the community really wanted next and the easiest lift was going to be don't ask, don't tell, repeal. And so I was in the room as Barney's staffer when we learned that together. And I learned that together. And both of us, it was what I call one of the moments I would have been fired if I didn't work for Barney Frank. Because when we were told in that room that leaders had been told that the next thing that the entire community wanted was the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell and not ENDA, I know that in that room I yelled out, that's not true. Fortunately, louder than me, yelled out my boss in the same cadence, that's not true. So I didn't get fired because my voice wasn't heard over my boss saying that. It is a mystery to me how we all thought we agreed together that ENDA would be next. And so I don't blame the leaders in Congress. However, I wish that people who had told that to our leaders would stand up and be accountable. And I'd love to hear from them. Because
I would, too. And you know, I want to ask you this, Diego, directly. And I know you may not be comfortable answering it. And if that's the case, that's fine. I understand. But I'm going to ask you anyway, see what you have to say. A lot of people in this community strongly believe to this day that the real stumbling block was the human rights campaign specifically. Can you tell us if that was true?
I wish I could, Becky. Unfortunately, the only things I can ever say with confidence are things that I've witnessed. If I had been in the room and anyone had said that to Leader Pelosi, to Speaker Pelosi, at the time, I would have made noise about it, told my boss, and told the community so that we could have made the understanding different. Whoever it is that told didn't do it in a public way because we would have been able to fight back about that and re-educate correctly, you know, our leaders. We weren't able to do that because whoever thought they were speaking for us forgot to talk to us.
Yeah. So that brings up another question then. How do we make sure that doesn't happen again. I floated this idea on the show a few times, and I want to ask you, as somebody who's a, well, let's be honest, you're an insider. I want to know what you think of this. I floated the idea that it is time for us to take a page from the Tea Party and start making the progressive version of the Tea Party to try and pull the Democratic Party back from the corporatist center and back to the progressive values that they only seem to remember when they're asking for our money and our votes. Do you think that that's a good idea? Is it time to start lopping heads here?
Well, I think I'll tell you this. I think we need lots of things happening at the same time. And what I mean by that, I'm not backing off of that. I'm saying that the Tea Party did a few things. They made a lot of noise. They did things also that were kind of scary, that, you know, they were banging on congressional doors. I wouldn't necessarily want to see us getting venomous about things, but I think that being activists is something that many of our community are ready to do, very skilled at. And I think we need insiders and outsiders making noise at the same time. I want to remind you, of course, that since that time in 09, prior to that, of course, we had, you know, Rob Andrews doing the historic trans rights for employment non-discrimination, at which I testified, and Shannon Minter testified, and, you know, Diane did, and a woman from NASA testified. We had four people with Shannon serving as a professional, and the rest of us being individual witnesses. Since that time, let's not forget that Kyler Braz testified in a Senate hearing. So on the record, for the first time ever, we had a trans voice speaking on the Senate. That's part of our history. I don't think that testimony alone, or my testimony alone, or even Shannon's, can make a difference. We're good at making noise in our community, and it's always time to do two or three things. One is we have to speak in the formal avenues we're permitted. Second, we do have to be louder and clearer about our message as trans people. But the third area, and one that comes into play for us at TFLAG, is that our most important friends are our allies. And this includes people who are parents of trans people or children of trans people, folks who are just like all of those legislators that we have to talk to. They are them, and we are not. So we have to remember to mobilize our allies who are always ready to stand strong with us and do something incredible.
Absolutely. And you know, that brings me up to my next question, because another reason why I wanted to have you on the show is because you're working with PFLAG now, and PFLAG is one of those organizations where everybody knows who PFLAG is, everybody knows what their mission is, but when you ask somebody and say, well, okay, trans person, what does PFLAG do for you? Nobody knows. So I want to ask you, what kind of work does PFLAG do around trans people and their families?
I'm glad you asked that. I'm going to tell you part of it now, and you'll hear more about it later. But first of all, I'll tell you right this minute, we have a program called Straight for Equality that teaches specifically businesses and corporations, major corporations, how to help people transition on the job, how to work with LGBT people, but with explicit, expressive inclusion of transgender people. One of our most recent ones, which I just take a lot of pride in, is Major League Baseball. Major League Baseball is the entity that brought in Jackie Robinson, number 42. That's the one that broke the race barrier. And they asked PFLAG National to come in and help them be trained to learn how to welcome trans people in their employment as well as into their players area. I mean, they all are, you know, MLB is one of those things that's a beacon for our country in terms of sometimes quiet inclusion, but always complete inclusion. And so when they asked us to do that, I just felt particularly heartened with something that goes along with apple pie and mom,
Absolutely. You know, that brings up an interesting question. I don't know if you're far along enough in your work on this to answer this, but I'm curious. Because I know, and I'm a baseball fan. I've been a baseball fan for many, many years. And I know that, that there have been complaints, for example, by female sportscasters that they are not allowed in the locker rooms because they're women, that there is a flat ban on women in these sports locker rooms. And so when you insert a trans person into the mix, that really kind of plays with people because, well, do you, you know, it depends on who you talk to. Depends on whether, you know, the person is considered a man or a woman in a lot of cases. How does PFLAG navigate a situation like that with Major League Baseball?
Well, clearly, the fact that they asked us to come in and help them be welcoming is where we stand strong. We were part of United End, leaving no one behind. You know, PFLAG National is one of the places that stood strong about that. There is no question about complete trans inclusion. And we are even sharpening parts of our mission and vision statement to explain more clearly and more strongly about what full inclusion means to us. And we don't stop with trans. We actually also add gender nonconforming people because there are a lot of people who don't identify on a binary scale. Everyone deserves inclusion. And clearly with Major League Baseball asking us to help them be culturally competent, how to welcome trans people, that means that they're not closing a door. So if we were advising on that particular thing, we most certainly would say trans people need to be able to be included.
I thought it was interesting because, you know, it's one of those last few things that we really, you know, I'm not sure we've worked out a good argument for yet. Not so much the bathroom issue as the locker room issue. In other words, you know, it's easier to make the argument that say, leave me alone, I'm just going to the bathroom, I'm closing the door behind me, and you have no right to say anything because the door is closed, leave me alone. It's another issue, at least I found, at least the political arguments around these issues, they change when we're talking about a locker room where people are open, where there's open showers, open lockers, where people are walking around naked, that kind of thing. So I'm wondering, does you personally and does PFLAG see that as the same issue, or is that different issues that require different tactics to negotiate, or what?
Well, I'll first speak personally, and I'll say this. Let's not forget that maybe, I mean, you and I are old enough. You're barely, because you're just 18, but...
yeah, right. Said,
no, you and I both remember being sports fans. We remember when they let that first woman into the football locker room and what a big deal it was.
Sure.
I mean, it turned into be no problem. But that's because you create zones of safety. You don't say that because someone goes into the locker room. They go everywhere in the locker room. You make places where people are accessible to the locker room and the players are accessible to them. Any more than I would want someone to follow me in the shower, you know, it doesn't mean I wouldn't be willing to grant an interview. And I think that they can create and have effectively in football and possibly already have in baseball. I haven't talked to our trainers yet to learn what they got back. But I know that there are ways in every sport to be able to create zones of safety within locker rooms that doesn't make the reporter lose out on good stories, but also doesn't make the players lose out on a proper sense of privacy.
Absolutely. So I think that's exactly the right tack to take. And I hear you. You're really struggling. I know you've got a cold or something.
That's all right. But I'll say that the other thing is when you're looking at things like the work we do at PFLAG for safer schools and working very fervently to keep AB 1266 in place in California and ready to defend the law in Maryland.
Which is the law that protects students in California from gender discrimination. We should just tell people.
Absolutely correct. And in sports as well as school. So
yes,
I mean, it's Title IX for trans people, you know, fairness and equality.
Do you think that's and let me ask you about that really quick. Do you think that that announcement that the EEOC has now found that Title IX applies to transgender students, is that a game changer in your opinion?
I think it is for the people who didn't know that they wanted to be supported, and it was the Department of Education. The EEOC has already been on board, thanks to Commissioner Feldblum, but the Department of Education making that ruling about Title IX is very important because it becomes explicit. It means that if people want to pretend they don't understand, you can show them on the piece of paper. You can give them the guidance directly, and then they know that who they have to include, which is us.
That's awesome. Diego, I want to thank you so much for coming on. I know that you sound like you need a nice hot cup of tea and maybe a warm blanket or something there, dude.
I've got a cup of tea waiting for me. Thank you, Becky.
Okay, thanks for coming on, man. And I hope you'll come on again and talk with us soon.
You know I will. Anytime you want me, you know I'm there. You're
okay. The best. Yeah, well, because we love you, and it's been too long. And we love having you on the show. So, all right, honey, you go get some rest and take care of yourself, and we'll talk to you later.
Thanks so much. Will do.
Okay. Bye-bye. All right, and that was Diego Sanchez, former senior aide for Congressman Barney Frank, also working with PFLAG now, and an all-around awesome dude who I happen to think is one of our community's greatest activists. I mean, truly, I mean, you want to know trans history? That's trans history right there. Okay. I love having him on because he's such a fount of information. I only wish I felt bad because he sounded like he was so struggling with his cold. And I that made me feel awful. So I kind of ended a couple of minutes early because I don't want to, the poor guy sounded like he was really struggling and, you know, he's a buddy and okay. Well, apparently we're having some issues, with folks not being able to get into the show. Apparently, our streams are filling up. That this is a bad thing.
That means that we've set another record for attendance, and we all get gold stars. It's fantastic.
I love
you guys. For nobody's able to hear. I'll work on that problem and get back to you on that. I'm not sure we're able to increase the stream listening capacity in the middle of the show, but I'll find out.
Okay, well, yeah, I apologize, and please, if you know anybody who is complaining that they can't get through the show, please remind them the podcast will be up, hopefully, about a day after. So if
tonight,
you miss it live...
I'll make a promise.
Tonight, okay.
I'll do it tonight.
You heard it. You heard it here. Mr. Mike has promised tonight.
It's so, like having a swear jar. I have to pay your money if I don't do it in time. It's horrible.
Well, you haven't done that in a long time. You haven't had to pay the swear jar in a long time. So... Yeah, but you see, because what we used to do was Mr. Mike, and Mr. Mike invented this. Don't blame this on me.
Yeah, it's true. He invented this
against my own protests, I would add, that he went, and every time he made me a promise, like, I'll get this done or I'll get that done, and he didn't get it done on time, he would put money in this, like, tip jar that was like a PayPal tip jar.
I'm too broke to do it now. Me.
Bad. And I never asked for this. He insisted on it. And, well, you used it a couple of times.
Sure.
But, anyway.
It's my way of saying I'm sorry when it doesn't happen the way we like it. So,
you know what we're going to do? I think we're going to get a little crazy. And because we are the Rebecca Juro Show and because we are completely independent, non-commercial media. Yes, say it with me now. Not owned by AOL. But in any case, I think we're going to do an early break, and then we'll come back in about five or so. And then shortly thereafter, assuming we can get Chloe and Lexi on the line, we'll be talking to them. They still haven't checked in with me. So, Chloe and Lexi, we need your phone number. If you are hearing this, contact me now. Okay? We need to put you, if you're going to put you on the air, we need a way to contact you. Okay? And then afterwards, a little bit later, we'll be hearing from Will Kohler. So, stay tuned for that. We'll catch you guys in five. We'll be right back. sticking around. And I just want to let people know that if you know somebody who's having a problem tuning into the show, Mr. Mike has set up an alternate line. I am going to, as I'm talking to you, I am going to do this. I am going to say, if you can tune in, I'm posting this on Facebook, into the show, use this link. Bam. Sure. There we go. Okay, nothing. I just posted it on Facebook. So, all right. So that's all taken care of. All right. I am still trying to get a hold of Chloe Segal. Wait. I've got a message here. Okay, trying to check in. Not sure what to do. My Skype is okay. Mr. Mike, I am going to pass you over a Skype user ID in about 3 seconds.
Oh, good. I'll look.
Okay. Hang on. Let me call up that window. Okay. Now I have passed the in, and I am going to talk to you and say, I'm talking to Lexi, who is one of the women who were supposed to be contacted. Okay. But you are on in like 2 minutes. Mike will call you. Okay. So just so you know what I'm doing here while I'm tuned in. Okay. All right. So, oh my goodness. And of course, our telephone is ringing here. What is this? Oh, I don't know. Nothing I can do. All right. Okay. She is ready, Mr. Mike. So, if you would want to get her on the phone, let me know when they're on. In the meantime, I'll take a minute. I'll tell you a little bit about our next guests. They are Chloe Segal. Who is, wait a minute, sometimes I hate these thread-based email systems. You lose your thing. Anyway, Lexi, who I was just chatting with on Facebook, is an avid video game hobbyist and trans rights activist from Western Massachusetts. She describes herself as a talkative girl with a drive to learn from the experiences and perspectives of others, always trying to grow. She genuinely likes people, despite her own hardships as a trans woman. Okay, well, we know something about that. She started on her own venture to be a journalist in the games industry, something I've dabbled with myself. And her first article was featured on the front page of Destructoid. She hopes to have a promising future as a writer. Very cool. Chloe, who is the other person we're going to be speaking to, is an indie game developer. She's worked on games such as Homesick, Aliens on My Mind, and currently finishing up the game, and I just love this name, Virus Jiggling Fever. Yeah. After being outed, she started advocating for trans rights wherever and whenever she could. She's recently made an appearance to speak about trans issues in gaming at a panel at PAX East, which is a major gaming convention, along with Lexi and other activists. Okay. And so let's see. Is Mr. Mike okay? Well, when Mr. Mike lets me know that he has made connection with them, I will bring them on. And the reason I wanted to have them on is because we're talking about trans gamers. Well, I happen to be a trans gamer. We had Laura Kate Dale on the show a little while ago, a few months ago. She was quite good. She got discriminated against at a Eurogamer, which is another one of these large conventions that takes place in Europe. I wanted to have them on because I know that as a gamer myself, I have found, people told me right up in front, the best thing for you to do as a gamer is just keep your mouth shut. Don't tell anybody you're trans. Don't tell anybody anything because they're just going to yell at you and call you names. And who needs that crap? So just keep your mouth shut and pretend you're a guy or something. That was what you were told when you were an early gamer and you were trans, like back in the day, And it seems like it's gotten a little bit better. In fact, I know it's gotten a little bit better because I've been involved with organizations that have helped to make it better. Let's see. Okay. All right. And we have Lexi and Chloe on the line. Hi, girls. How you doing?
Hi. Hey. How are you?
How's it going? Hey.
Good. I'm so glad to have you on. I hope you heard what I was talking about a little earlier.
Yeah, I was headed in.
Oh, you were listening? Cool, cool. Okay. Well, I wanted to have you both on because I want to talk about trans in gaming. And like I was just saying, when I first started gaming and you know, had friends who were other gay and trans folks who gamed, they all told me the same thing. Just shut up, because otherwise these assholes are just going to take it apart. It's not worth it. Just play your game and shut up.
Yeah.
Do you think that's... are things changing in that realm, do you think?
Chloe, would you like to open it, or may
no,
I?
No, you can go ahead.
Tell us who is who.
I know you got lots to say about this.
All right. So. Well, for me, my experience has changed sort of significantly as I've transitioned, because voice work was one of my personal decisions on something I wanted to put a lot of effort into. And I kind of, because I'm such a gamer, and so lately my experience with discrimination in terms of my voice has been people hating on me as a girl, which, you know, I'll take it, but it's still a very serious problem. Every once in a while, I'll mess with everybody and just be like, hey, watch it. And you know, that always throws like everybody off.
It's like that movie Better Than Chocolate, where the trans woman gets called a cunt and she says, "Oh, thank you."
Yeah.
So what I wanted to ask about was I wanted to ask you, Chloe, in particular, since you are actually a game developer, I was wondering, does the trans experience, in your opinion, lend itself to actually being worked into an actual game, as opposed to just trans gamers? Do you think that the trans experience can be effectively reflected in games themselves?
Oh my God, absolutely.
Well, I've got a few designs that I have that I've wanted to do. I just have not gotten around to doing them because I want to make sure that they're perfect and I have the right team working with me.
Chloe, have you heard of the game Dysphoria?
Yes, I actually know.
I have not. Why don't you, could you describe that for us?
It's extremely good.
Okay, well, yeah. Could you give us a little more than just that?
I was leaving it to Chloe. It's
been a while.
Basically,
since
it's this really it's a really simple little flash game. You can find it on Newgrounds. It's spelled D-Y-S, the number 4-I-A. And it's basically kind of I could equate it to an art house experience as a video game. It's just minor, or even a WarioWare. If anybody's played WarioWare, it's a series of really short, self-contained mini games that is meant to be an auto. The author says, this is an autobiographical game about my experiences with hormone replacement therapy. My experience isn't anyone else's and is not meant to be representative of every trans person. And, it has four levels, starting with gender, and it's just incredibly, incredibly fun.
Really? Because, you know, it's funny. You hear that disclaimer, I'm like, oh, these people know the audience they're going for.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
you know, because guaranteed, if you don't say something like that, one of us is going to call you out on it. But in any case... So that's great, and I'm glad to hear that. One thing that I've noticed in my own experiences gaming, I used to play the online game EVE Online for a few years. I also played several others, and in the course of those, I've both joined and helped to build LGBT specific gaming groups. Like, for example, in EVE, they have corporations, which are roughly analogous to what they call guilds in other games. And I helped to create a corporation called Stonewall Interstellar there. And one of the things that I've noticed is that it's great in one sense, because you can get like-minded people together, and you can hang out and talk about gay and trans stuff with your fellow gay and trans people, and nobody hassles you about it. And yet, on the other hand, there's a downside, because it's also self-segregating. Because if you're putting together a group of LGBT people, well, then what you're kind of saying is this is for LGBT people. If you're not LGBT, this isn't really for you. So, do you feel that there's a risk of self-segregation when we build and use groups like that?
I don't think so. I think it's more of, and it was the same story with when Lexi and I went to PAX, is It's mm-hmm. it's literally just a safe place to go where you know that you're not going to get hassled. And if you do, then you'll have people that will back you up. And I think it's more of that than anything. It's not specifically saying, like, oh, well, you fit into this group. That means you have to be in this, like, you know, area. It's just a welcome space that you can go to. And possibly also another space for people that aren't familiar with our issues to kind of learn about them and get some education if they are still lacking.
Okay. That sounds great in theory. And, you know, I found that, you know, there's benefits to both because, yeah, you want, you know, there's always a tendency trans folks, we tend to look for community. We tend to build community because there's so few of us that when we find each other, right. we're like, oh, come on, let's go hang out.
And I'm guilty of that. Like, one of the things I don't like doing is the whole, hey, I'm trans, you're trans, so let's hang out and only talk about that. But, like, when you're early in transition, that's, like, really necessary, I think.
Yes, I agree. And not only that, but you know, you don't want to have to. I mean, because when I first started playing Eve, one of the reasons I got together with another player and started forming our own corporation was because you would say something and you would accidentally let something slip. Or one time, I remember I was playing and I went by a female name, as I always do in these games, and I had to go on I had to go on TeamSpeak, which is of course a voice chat mm-hmm. that is used
yeah.
for gaming.
Yeah.
And when I went on the voice chat and with this voice that you're hearing now, you know, people are saying, "Oh, so your name is Becky, huh? Really? So did you get your penis cut off?" You know, I mean, I'm getting those kind of comments and. You know,
that's
because
awesome.
These people, they think it's, I mean, they don't, they're not from our mindset. They think this is all good humor. Hey, you know, pass another beer. Hey, get your dick cut off. You know, I mean, that's what it is. They don't see it as an issue. And yet one of the reasons why I stopped hanging out in those spaces is because, you know, it's like I get this crap all day. I don't need to sit down at my computer and play a video game and get the same shit. I'm supposed to be escaping that stuff. You know what I'm saying? So
I absolutely do.
That's why I'm torn about this, and I'm wondering, what do you think? Now I know Chloe. I know you made. In fact, I know you both made a presentation at PAX about trans in gaming. What exactly were you talking about, and who were you talking about it to?
The primary talking points that we wanted to touch upon were just the. It was a simple matter of awareness. Most people, a staggering number of people, don't know about anyone in the that is trans and in the gaming industry. I don't want to name drop, but I know there were a couple of the other panelists that were there with us who are very, 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 very prolific game designers who have had their hands on a lot of projects. One of them was an employee of Interplay, famous for the Fallout series. So mainly we were there to just, as a safe way for people to ask the questions that normally they might not know if it's okay to ask. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, absolutely. As I said earlier, we had that incident with Laura Kate Dale at Eurogamer where she felt completely, you know, dehumanized and mocked. And we had her on the show here. And, you know, it seems like there is, and I see this still, you know, I think part of the problem, and correct me if I'm wrong here, if you feel the same way, part of the problem is that a lot of the kids, and they are kids, you know, you see in these chats, and it's almost like, okay, mommy and daddy aren't looking over my shoulder and I'm out of school, so now I can act like a complete asshole to anyone I want. You know, and so mm-hmm. I get to a point. My first MMO when I first started years ago was EverQuest, and I got so tired of the bigotry and the hate that I said, you know what? I like this game, but I can't tolerate this. I'm not playing anymore because it's unpleasant. Not because I didn't like the game, but because I couldn't stand the people. I was forced to socialize.
Well,
with.
You know, my take on that it just comes down to volume. When you've got something that is kind of small and niche, sometimes it can be easier to find like cool people or genuine people. But when something, gaming has become extraordinarily mainstream, and it just keeps getting more and more popular. And when you have that many people all consuming the same media, you're bound to get plenty of bad apples. And unfortunately, the ignorant people are always the loudest. So
yeah. So what do we do? So how do trans gamers and game developers and trans folks and allies and people who want to see this situation improve? Well, how do we go about doing that? Do we go to the companies? Do we go to the community? How do we approach this?
I think one of the most important things is just like Lexi said, is awareness. Basically, just existing, just being there, showing them who we are,
doing what we're doing now.
And yeah, you know, we're normal people. That's all we need to show them.
Absolutely.
And that's kind of just like a very watered down version of it. Of course, there's lots of stuff that we need to do. And I think one of the important things
is just don't be quiet.
Yeah,
use your voice. That's my take on it. Be louder than everybody else. Like, make sure that you're heard, because it's easy to get drowned out when you've got so much opposition.
You two are a couple, right?
No.
Are you two a couple?
I'm dating a trans man.
What?
Not a trans woman. I'm dating a trans man, not a trans woman.
Are you dating a trans man? Okay, so, all right, so I'm completely wrong. Not the first time. Okay. No, you two sound like you're finishing each other's sentences.
Chloe and I don't hook up now.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, in any case, another thing I wanted to ask you about, and this is not gaming, but I promised Chloe I was going to ask you this too. She's been making some great comments online about the whole RuPaul situation, and it was one of the reasons. That's how I found Chloe, as she remembers.
Chloe told me about
because
that.
She was making great comments on my own post from The Advocate about RuPaul, and so we wound up chatting on Facebook, and that's how this all came about. So I was wondering, and either one of you can take this, or both of you can take this. What do you think? Do you think that somebody like RuPaul, who goes on television, has a responsibility to refrain from slurs that may be perfectly fine in private conversations but have no place on television?
Absolutely. My problem with RuPaul is that he is a gay man. No, that's not my problem. Rephrase. My problem is that he is a gay man who has come into our space and is using slurs about transsexuals and then defending his right as a gay man to use transsexual slurs. And I'm not okay with that.
Okay, I can understand that. Lots of people watch his show.
Lots of people watch his show. And when he puts something like shemale on the air, that's teaching all these other gay people and straight people and cis people that that's an okay word to use, but it's not. That's a word that was invented by the porn industry. It's extremely derogatory and offensive. But
I totally agree. Let me ask you another question. I mean, we've been talking a lot about shemale recently. What about tranny? I mean, I find that there are people on either side of this. There are people who say, oh, it's not such a big deal. If you're a trans person yourself, it's fine to use. I personally think that counts as a reclaimed word. I can use it, but my straight friends can't.
Yeah.
That's my opinion. That's my opinion too.
I think the important thing is to remember that it does bother people, and those are the people we should be worried about. Especially since it's an extremely triggering word to some people. And it's like, I would rather value their safety over somebody's...
Why would you want to put somebody in a negative headspace?
There's literally no reason for anybody to use the word. So
yeah, when I'm among my friends, I use that word. When I'm among my close friends, that's something I'll say or I'll joke around. But that's how everybody is when they're with their friends, you know? Right. It's not something I would ever use professionally. It's not something I would ever go on record as like saying or supporting. I think it's a word that needs to be used with extreme caution.
I tend to completely agree with you there.
I think the other thing too.
Chloe. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, like, I think the other thing that should be considered about the whole situation with RuPaul is we've been asking him to stop this for lots of times.
And,
this whole situation with the female or she-male segment, I think that's when everything started to explode.
Yes.
But for some reason, they're misconstruing, like, oh, we just got mad all of a sudden. It's like, no, we've been quiet and politely asking him to stop for years, and then we started to get loud, and that's when they started paying attention to us. And
exactly.
I think that's an important thing to consider. And the other thing to consider is that he's no longer using it, and it's been stricken off the air. They're not using those segments at all. Literally, the only thing that's going on is just certain people that are complaining that it's off the air, and it's like it should be an issue that's over and done with.
Exactly. And I think if you want to see him use that, let him go buy the DVD. You know, yeah. I mean, I watch it in the privacy of your own home.
I do want to stress that with the gay community putting out articles calling us oversensitive and that we're attacking freedom of speech and things like that, things that we never said about the gay community when they were trying to remove slurs from their community. And right. I think by putting that out, it's really impacting trans people a lot because they have a much bigger platform than we do. And when the general public sees that, oh, we're just a bunch of oversensitive, whiny social justice warriors, then most of our others...
As if being a social justice advocate is a bad thing.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
And that really hurts our other issues because people belittle it and think less of them.
Absolutely. Hey, Chloe, Lexi, I want to say thank you so much for coming on and talking to us. I hope you'll come on again because this was a lot of fun.
Yeah, definitely.
I would love to come on again. This was lovely.
Awesome. Thank you so much and have a good night. All right, we'll talk to you later. All right, and that was Chloe and Lexi. We are going to go to a break. We have got Jenny Slater and Shame. We'll be back in a little while with Lil Cola.
Such a shame, hey, hey. They smile when they are low. How I wish the folks at home could only see what's come to any, how proud they'd be. Getting paid for doing what comes naturally.
Alright, we are back. It's the Rebecca Giroir Show. How you doing? We are back, and we should any moment now be getting a call from the ever-amazing Mr. Will Kohler, he of the Back to Stonewall blog. Will, are you there?
I'm here, Becky. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just great. How you doing?
Oh, yay.
Now, I know you had a special story that you wanted to share with us tonight, so why don't I just let you go ahead and tell it?
Well, it's not really a special story. It's more of a commentary of things that are happening now that are linked to things that have happened in our past. Everyone knows about Joe Becker's controversial book.
Okay, now wait. We should tell people what this is. This is called a book called Forcing the Spring, which basically describes the history of the marriage movement, and it's come under a lot of criticism because a lot of folks feel that it was directed to let Human Rights Campaign President Chad Griffin take a lion's share of this credit, and it discounted the contributions of many activists in the community who worked very hard to bring the marriage movement to that point and beyond. And do you think, you tell me, that this is, do you think that the criticisms being leveled at this book are fair, and what's going on?
Well, from what I've read, of it, I haven't read the entire book, the excerpts I've read, in a way, yes, I actually do. Just for the fact that it's not being marketed the way it should be. It's about Prop 8. It's only about California. It's not about the history of gay marriage. It's about what happened to California with Prop 8. It's not being marketed that way. She did no forward work on it whatsoever, like about the history of same-sex marriage before it. And she started it in such a way to make it seem like, you know, this was it. You know, this was the beginning. This was the revolution. Yeah, the revolution's been going on for a very long time. I mean, the first same-sex couple that was married were two guys in, I think it was Minnesota in the 70s. Yeah. You know, that's when the revolution began. And this leads me to something. You know, there are just so many liberties taken when people document our history, either by their own personal agenda for money or... Mm-hmm. Just for the fact that they're too lazy, like Joe Becker, to use Google, or the fact that
do you think that's what it is, or was there? Do you think there was maybe a political agenda there?
No, I think there's a lot of it going on that it was, you know, full disclosure, I'm not really a fan of HRC.
They had a major hand in it. I find it
hard to believe that Chad and like everyone at HRC and Olson and Bowles didn't get, like, advanced copies and didn't know what was written before it actually came out and the criticisms began. And they were obviously fine with it because, you know, it took them, like, 9 days to respond after the first criticisms. You know, I mean, they could have stopped it or, you know, like, asked for reprint or editions while it was going on. Because I'm sure they saw the work because, you know, they were her main subject matter. Yeah, I like to call the book Forcing the Fraud because I do believe it's, you know, we all know HRC has ways of...
Let me ask you, though, Will, about HRC. Do you think that they're, like, doing this intentionally, that they want to basically, you know, well, we want to make our president the hero of this story, so we're okay with promoting this version of it, even though it's perfectly well known that not everything here is factual or in concert with what everyone else in the community witnessed at the time?
Well, you don't really see them putting out big, like, denials of it. I mean, it's
well, yeah, but know, wait, Chad, hang on.
On TV
Will
a few times,
not
and, like,
denying
oh, well,
something.
I never could have gotten where I am
as,
without
as
Mary DeVito and everything and mentioning them after the fact. But, yeah, you know, they, ignored the story for the first 9 days, you know, in typical HRC fashion, hoping that it would die down and they wouldn't have to say anything. So I believe there's a lot of complicity here. And, you know, unless they man up, and, you know, Chad Griffin is becoming the Joe Solomese of 2014.
Really?
He reeks of, like, I want to be self-important. I want to be famous. I mean, if you watched him on the Morning Joe interview from the other day.
Yeah, I did. You know, I saw that.
I have never seen such hammy acting since, like, you know, Sarah Bernhardt.
Well, my issue with them is now they're going for this Southern strategy, which is like, what, did you forget about New York where trans people have no rights? Oh, wait, but gay people can get married, so that doesn't count. Oh, wait, what about New Hampshire where they're passing a constitutional amendment to protect gay people, but trans people can still be thrown out of their homes and denied their jobs? Oh, no, gays are covered, so you're not covering that. You're not going where the desperate people, where the people who are most desperate need the thing. You're going down to places that will never pass your civil rights, like Alabama and Oklahoma. I mean,
I don't
understand why these people
are
wasting
Chad
money
state,
on states where they're hated. That's what
I mean, and you know, they'll go down there and they'll do what they've done every other time they've invaded a state, I mean, gone to a state to help, and that is they will just totally ignore the grassroots activists who laid the groundwork, come in, swoop up, and take any credit. And that's just their modus operandi.
Frankly, I think this is not really a support mission for the South. This is a fundraising mission for HRC. They're going to come in. They're going to have all these big, promotional events. People will throw them lots and lots of money, and they'll take all that money and then go back to Washington, D.C.
Well,
I think that's what's going
to
happen. I think that's what it's about, because they know perfectly well.
$375,000 a year salary.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying is people know perfectly well that you're not getting gay marriage in Arizona. You're not getting gay marriage in Texas. You're not getting gay marriage in Mississippi.
And so, the way we're going, we're not going to get it in Ohio. And also, you know, the whole strategy is like wrong now because, you know, it's not about hearts and minds anymore. It's about judges and courts.
Absolutely. You know, Will, the difference is that, for example, in a state like Ohio, yes, you right now you have a Republican legislature, but we also know that Ohio went for Obama. So it is not out of the realm of possibility that, you know, people are fed up with John Kasich. Things could swing towards the left in a state like Ohio, but I don't see how you're going to manage a swing like that in Mississippi or Missouri or Texas or Oklahoma or places like that. And I think they're just throwing money away on these states that are never going to do anything for them.
Yes, but think of what a great chapter it'll make in Joe Becker's next book. I mean, really. And that brings us back to the book. And that brings us back to the rewriting of our LGBT history, which has happened so much in the past. I mean, this is an isolated occurrence. You know, I mean, Joe Becker really has no excuse because, you know, the marriage fight has been well documented over the past 10, 15 years. So, you know, but when we get back to our past history, like in the 80s and in the 60s of Stonewall, there was never really much documentation. There still isn't to this day. Most of the documentation that remains are verbal histories taken from people. We don't really know how true most of them are. I'm not saying that anyone would lie. But, you know, memories get foggy. Things take on a different angle. Even Randy Schultz, you know, who wrote And the Band Played On.
And the Band Played On, very well-known, famous gay author.
I'm sorry? There's a whole section in there about Gayton Dugas, who was patient zero, or who the CDC claimed was patient zero. He was actually in the first cluster of AIDS cases in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. The book basically demonized him. And there was never any record that any of that happened, that he acted that way. There's records from the CDC saying that he helped them as much as he could. And it came out, like, maybe 10 years ago through the publisher of the book that, you know, we did that on purpose because the book needed a villain and everything else. So this man's you know, total life. You know, he was turned into a, you know, he was turned into, like, Typhoid Mary of AIDS and demonized when most of the actions that they wrote in the book about him were fictionalized just to make sensation to sell the book.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and it goes back. I mean, even back to Stonewall. Now, we've talked about this before. I love Sylvia Rivera. I knew Sylvia Rivera because I'm an old dude. she's a wonderful woman. She did so much work, I mean, for youth and the transgender community. And in the early days when it was much rougher than it is now. And, you know, we get back into history then. And, you know, like we talked about Stonewall, and you hear, you know, she threw the first brick. She threw the first high heel. She threw the first coins. Yeah. And there's really no proof of that. There never was. There never is. I mean, there never will be. I mean, you can't really claim it's true. Just like I can't really say that it wasn't true, I can say what I found. I can say what I found in research. And you know, I've gone back to articles from the 80s, and Sylvia herself says that she was in the bar, but she never said that she threw anything. All the research I've done is it points back to a lesbian named Stormy who was being pulled out of the bar, and she was in the background, and she was throwing coins and everything. Now, that's not saying that Sylvia wasn't there, and she was. You know, I mean, by all accounts, she was in the melee. It was 3 days worth of thing. And she was very important to our history. But for people to say and try to document these things without having specific proof is dangerous to preserving our history in the way it should be preserved. I mean, Sylvia Rivera has a legacy that stands on its own. I mean, just the things we know that she did do, I mean, makes her one of the most fascinating characters and activists in LGBT history. We don't need to tag on something that we don't know is true and, you know, accidentally, you know, change history. And that happens a lot now, and I it sort of annoys me, obviously, but you know, it's really something we have to be careful of. Like this Becker book, you know, 30 years from now, you know, someone's going to pick up that book and say, oh, so this is how it started. No, it wasn't. And that's why we have to be very, very careful. And when we were at Haas, there was a woman talking about how she's documenting Sylvia Rivera. She's going to be writing a documentary, and she mentioned Stonewall, and I didn't say anything because I didn't want to get into a big to-do. But, you know, things like that, we have to be very, very careful. I mean, Sylvia Rivera. I mean, I knew Sylvia Rivera. I knew Marsha P. Johnson. They were wonderful people. Marsha was a little crazy, but she was great.
Hey, Sylvia, everybody's a little crazy, you know?
Sylvia was a hellion. So, you know, I mean, there's just so much documented things that we should focus on when we do our history instead of perpetuating folklores that, in the end, will change the whole scope. I mean, do you understand what I'm saying here?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we have to learn from our history in order to, A, prevent ourselves from repeating it, and B, to take the lessons that work and apply them to modern-day issues. I think there's a lot we can learn from Sylvia. I think there's a lot we can learn from our history in general. In fact, I went on a rant about this a couple of weeks ago on the show where I said I don't think we respect our history enough. And I was talking specifically about the trans community, but I think it's true probably across the board because there aren't that many folks who focus on our history like yourself. You know, so it's one of the reasons why I started writing my book. And, you know, I think this is something that, you know, we need to stay concerned and active and protect our history, and not just protect it, but tell it and retell it for the next generation.
And, you know, it actually does date back, historians with this problem to the Greeks. If you go back to the days of Hesiod and Herodotus, you know, they both thought, one thought that history should just be done plain through social science, while the other one thought it should be written as a compelling narrative and take some liberties. But the problem is that our history, especially our past history, was just so badly documented to start out with because, yeah. You know, we had no news coverage. We had some underground papers. That's it. I mean, it's not like CBS was writing everything that happened to us. And when they did, it was very bad.
Will, I want to thank you so much for coming on and talking to us. I know you'll come back because you come on the show all the time, and we'll talk history again because I think this is so important, and I want to include more of it on the show going forward. So we're going to have you back again real soon.
And the last and your last thing was awesome with Lexi and.
Oh, just wait. I got one more segment to come up, honey. That's why I got to save the time for. So
yeah.
Just
all right,
keep
out of here. Bye.
All right. Good night. Have a good one, Becky. We love you. Okay. Bye-bye. And that, of course, was Will Kohler, the Back to Stonewall blog. Check them out, backtostonewall.com. Very good stuff. Always good. Always know our history. Now, you know, I promised you I was going to talk about something that I did a little research on today, both intentional research and unintentional research. I realized last week on the show. Okay. Oh, Mr. Mike is signaling me that we have an optional break. Now, actually, I'm going to pass on the optional break right now, Mr. Mike, because I want to take the time to tell this story. I was thinking about this, and I realized that I did a little research. In fact, it wasn't very difficult. I just looked at, just went back to the article and checked. And I found out that the guy, the name of the associate editor who was the one who posted the Drag Race 76 video at Gay Voices was this guy. His name is James Nichols. Well, James Nichols, apparently... this is not, and let's not forget, when James Nichols posted this Drag Race 76 video on Gay Voices, he called it hilarious. And I called out Gay Voices in a op-ed for having a lack of perspective. And I found out some interesting things that lead me to believe that I was actually 100% correct. Okay, because first, through a post from his boss, Noah Michelson, earlier this week on Facebook, I found out that this James Nichols is 23 years old. Okay, that was the first part. So the first concern is, I called them out for having no perspective. How much perspective does a 23-year-old have on the history of this community? And you're charging him with putting up content that's accessible to the entire community? I mean, this kid is barely out of school, and you're giving him the authority of an editor? I mean, no wonder he fucked up so badly. This is what happens when you give when you raise the responsibility on people who are too young and too inexperienced to handle the responsibility. This is what happens. I know. I used to work at CBS. I used to manage a group of teenagers, okay? And we knew, you know, as a manager, every time, every good manager knows, when you give a child too much responsibility, you shouldn't be surprised when they fuck it up. Okay, so that was fact number one, the fact that he's young. And I don't want to criticize because he's young, because there are a lot of people that age who really know their shit. But this guy clearly has significant deficits in his worldview and his perspective. And to leave that level of responsibility with somebody who's that tunnel visioned is deeply concerning to me. And, of course, that decision goes directly to Noah Michelson. So, you know, that's where the responsibility is. Now, wait, this gets even better. Because I was talking on Facebook earlier today, and I'm going to talk about this because I asked permission, and I will. I was talking to Parker Malloy, of course, who you know, been on the show, trans issues correspondent for The Advocate, and she was telling me about an interaction, because she used to write for Gay Voices, and she told me about an interaction that she had with James Nichols. And I'm going to read a little bit about this. Now, I don't know what preceded this particular thing. Actually, wait a minute. Let me go back before I read this. Let me go back here. Because Parker, well, I'm going to read what Parker wrote here. And I asked her, I asked her for permission to read this on the air. And here's what Parker says. Last year, James Nichols, did a series where he interviewed people involved in the Brooklyn drag scene. In just about every piece, he included these people using the word tranny. Now, obviously, when you're interviewing someone, you don't have an obligation to run things word for word. Nichols could have removed the references to that word, but instead left it in. I explained to Noah that James leaving that word in these pieces only further confuses the public of whether it's okay or not to use these slurs. James followed this up by including the word tranny in his very next interview. Noah told me he was fine with cis-identified drag queens using words like tranny, and I told him that I could not write for HPVG, in other words, Huffington Post Gay Voices, anymore on moral grounds. At the time, this was me giving up my largest platform. I didn't have a regular gig at The Advocate yet, but I felt that my moral fiber is more important than whether or not people read me. Knowing that my free work was being used to drive revenue to that site, and by extension, James and Noah's paychecks was too much. Okay, and then there was, apparently there was a conversation between Parker and James Nichols, and there was a post. I'm going to read this, and this is Parker speaking to James Nichols. It says, I'm just wondering what you have against me. You troll me on Twitter, favoriting every tweet where someone insults me. You post transphobic content. Seriously, the world doesn't need any more articles about RuPaul. That includes the most hateful slur someone can use against people like me. Why, James, do you insist on continuing to write such hateful things? I would never write something that had the word faggot in it. So why do you feel empowered to write tranny? Because a drag queen, cisgender man, said so? I don't understand you, and I don't understand what your issue is with me. Now, it's worth noting that after this incident, after Parker left Gay Voices and this whole thing, do you know how Noah Michelson handled it like a firm leader? He promoted him to associate editor. So, again, this is a clear case, in my opinion, now, having learned this information, which I did not know before today. I mean, I knew a little bit, but I did not know this whole story before today. So, what Noah Michelson did was he took a guy who has zero perspective, zero interest, has shown open hostility to the transgender community, and puts him in charge of posting videos that are clearly transphobic, clearly hateful, clearly personal attacks. And I mean, why would you expect anything else? Okay, and then after this guy's transphobia towards Parker, he promotes him. So that tells you something, that not only doesn't Noah Michelson have a problem with James Nichols' transphobia, he approves of it so much that he promoted him to associate editor. And I have to tell you something. I said this on Facebook earlier. I said some form of this on Facebook earlier, but I'm going to say it now. When I first decided that I had been blogging for the Balearico Project for a lot of years. I've been with Balearico since, I think it was 2006. So I've been with Balearico for a lot of years. I wanted to write for the premier platform. Yeah, I wanted my work to get out on the Huffington Post. So I tried all these different ways. I tried contacting people. Nobody knew what to do. And I couldn't get, you know, what they call a login. Right? So at one point, when they decided to initiate Gay Voices, like shortly thereafter, and they announced the name of the site. And I contacted Noah Michelson. I said, you know, dude, I said, why can't you call it LGBT Voices? Why not Queer Voices? Why not something that's a little more inclusive? And we went back and forth. Well, the higher ups think it's better this way. So we went back and forth on that. The upshot was I asked him for a login and he gave it to me. So that's how I got contributor status at the Huffington Post. Now, I like the status of writing for the Huffington Post. I mean, it's the premier blogging platform. I think I'm a pretty good blogger. I think I'm a top-line blogger. People read my stuff. So, yeah, I took a little bit of pride in that. It's not like any editors were offering me paid work. So, you know, you take what you can get. And this was as high as apparently I was going to be allowed to ascend at that point. Or, well, we'll see. Who's to say about the future? But, you know, so I took a little pride and accomplishment. And my work has gotten good attention there. And I don't have any complaints on that score. But I have to tell you, whereas once I kind of took some pride in being on Vay Voices, it's harder and harder for me over these last few weeks, and particularly over these last few days, to find that pride, to feel like I'm not, I don't know, I want to be careful here because I don't want it to sound like I feel like I'm collaborating with the enemy. That's what it feels like. I feel like I'm giving content to people who are perfectly happy to use their platform to mock and denigrate us for yucks, for laughs, because it's hilarious, right, James Nichols? It's hilarious. Trans women getting shot on camera. Woohoo! What a party, huh? Yeah, let's mock the most persecuted and vulnerable people in our community. Well, yeah, that sounds like a great way to show community solidarity. Let's show how good we, you know, rich cis gay guys are. And, you know, we're all in our little special club, you know, and let's take it out on the trannies because, you know, they have to write for us. I mean, that's really what it is. I mean, look at what has been published. Look at what has been published since this whole debacle, since this whole RuPaul thing. Aside from the contributors like myself and other people who have been writing about this, okay, everything that has been coming from the Huffington Post editorial staff has focused on one view and one view only. RuPaul walks on water and trannies are wrong. That's what the voice is. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like this RuPaul walks on water. That stupid video, that spin video with Lady J and the British drag queen. I mean, that's what it is. Everything. It's like this editorial staff is saying, yeah, we'll publish you, but we're going to use our editorial influence and power to put up as much anti-trans content as we possibly can. That's what it seems like. And I know that may not be true. And I'm sure Noah would be the first to say, oh, that's not fair. But then again, he said that wasn't fair when I criticized him for perspective. And we both know that that's bullshit. Because obviously, if someone who had more perspective than a 23-year-old transphobe had been judging that video, it probably wouldn't have gone up. But because you put a bigoted child in charge of content, this is what happens. When you put too much responsibility in the hands of kids, you shouldn't be surprised when they fuck it up. Repeatedly. And when those kids fuck it up, what you do is you make sure you don't give them too much responsibility. You don't give them a new title and a bigger paycheck. I mean, am I crazy here? Am I? I mean, I'm sorry. Again, this is not a personal attack against Noah Michelson. I think he's a friend. I think he's a good guy. I think he has good ultimate goals. But I think the way he carries out his editorial policy is disgraceful. Disgraceful. I'm sorry. I mean, to put this guy, a known anti-transgender person who has acted transphobically in the past, who has caused trans bloggers to leave the site, and that's the guy you put in charge of judging a video like that? That's the guy you give a title? That's who you promote? Well, I'm sorry, but I think that says something. And I think it says something about the priorities of Noah Michelson. I think it's like a lot of editors. He doesn't want to employ us. He doesn't want any trans people on his staff. He wants mini versions of himself. That's what he wants. And clearly that's what he got. But maybe without the experience and perspective to carry it out. Because, of course, you know, again, I'm sorry, but you know what? Fresh out of college, you should be a writer, not an editor. Nobody should be giving you that much responsibility until you prove you're worthy of it. And clearly, this guy has shown he can't handle it. I mean, he started a war because he couldn't just see how bigoted that video was. And you know what's even worse? I could see, you know what? He's a 23-year-old kid. He fucked up. Okay? Noah Michelson is coming out and defending this kid. You know what? Bullshit. Come out of the closet, James Nichols. Take your lumps that you deserve and stop hiding behind your editor. Stop being a coward. If you want to spew your bigoted views, then come out and say it up front. Don't hide behind videos. Don't hide under your editor's desk. Come out and take us on. You know what? Get in touch with me. Come on this show. I'll take you on any day. I took on Noah. I'll take on you too. Because what you do, you are the problem. You are the problem. People like you with anti-transgender bigotry like yours in a positions of editorial power in LGBT media are the problem. They need to be removed and replaced with people who understand that LGBT has four letters, not two. And furthermore, that you are supposed to be representing the views of an entire community, not your little Apple Teeny Club. I'm sorry. I have great respect for Noah Michelson. I mean, the guy has done a lot. Okay? He's got a resume that I would kill for. Okay? But that's not the point. The point is that we can now see quite clearly through Noah Michelson's own actions and how he has taken this known transphobe who has been so transphobic and so aggressive about it that he actually caused Parker Malloy to leave the site and promoted him. That tells you something. That is an editorial action taken by Noah Michelson. That he says, okay, what are we going to do? We're not going to hire a trans person. No, we'll promote the transphobe. We'll promote the person that spews such bigotry that people are actually leaving because of it. I'm sorry. I don't find that credible. And you know, and I'll tell you something. This is causing me to question my future blogging at Gay Voices. I'm not ready to say anything. I'm not ready to make any firm commitments one way or another or anything like that. But you know what? I'm rethinking this whole deal because I don't know if I can write for these people anymore. I just don't know. My God. Oh, and Parker's sending me more stuff. Parker, why did you send me this 20 minutes ago? I'm out of time. Oh, my goodness. All right. Anyway, we are, in fact, out of time. But who knows what we'll be talking about next week. I want to say thank you to everybody for tuning in. I want to say thank you to Diego Sanchez. I want to say thank you to Chloe and Lexi. I want to say thank you to the ever amazing Mr. Mike Scott for twisting my knob so I can push your buttons. And I want to say thank you to you for supporting this media, for tuning in every week. We love you, and we will be back next week. Have a good night, everybody.
that hurt. Oh, that hurt big time. Oh,
folks,
my.
Right now, we may need emergency surgery.
Oh!
In the studio.
You won.